Hello, and welcome to the Winter 2013 podcast for the journal Pediatric Physical Therapy. I'm Donovan Stutel. This month, a new clinical practice guideline for the management of congenital muscular torticollis, comparison of the TIMP and the Bayley 3, the implications of sedentary behavior for children with cerebral palsy, and more. This podcast is brought to you by the Section on Pediatrics of the American Physical Therapy Association. The section seeks to promote the highest quality of life for all children, people with developmental disabilities, and their families. First this month, here is Editor-in-Chief Anne Van Sant with her editorial on clinical practice guidelines.
The long-awaited clinical practice guideline for congenital muscular torticollis appears in this issue. The clinical practice guideline represents a significant achievement for Sandra Kaplan, Colleen Cutler, and Linda Fetters, and for the section on pediatrics. As we strive to assure our clinical practice is based on available research evidence, contributions such as clinical practice guidelines represent major contributions to knowledge translation. By orchestrating a process that gathered relevant research literature, rated the quality of that research, and digested that literature in a way that leads to effective statements for action, the authors have demonstrated knowledge translation at the highest level. The document is noteworthy, not only for its size, but also for the organizational structure that Kaplan, Cutler, and Fetters have developed that will serve as a model for clinical practice guidelines that will be developed in the future. Importantly, this document is designed to serve as a reference for practicing clinicians. Clinical practice guidelines are unlike other articles in the journal that present a research study, a systematic review that addresses a specific clinical question, or a case study that demonstrates how a clinical colleague addressed an unusual situation. This is not the type of article that you sit down and read. Rather, as you encounter infants with congenital muscular torticollis, please use the guideline to determine the appropriate actions to guide your efforts. I know how deeply the authors feel about encouraging readers to look into the document to better understand the strength of the evidence that supports the clinical practice guidelines' recommendations for action. And as you continue to work with this population, I know you will become increasingly familiar with both the evidence and the clinical practice recommendations for action that are published here. Becoming familiar with the format and substance of this clinical practice guideline will put you in good stead for future clinical practice guidelines that the section on pediatrics will develop. Look carefully at the author's suggestions for implementation of the recommendations. And most of all, do your part in implementing the recommendations, helping others understand the clinical practice guideline, and also providing feedback to the section and the authors. Your thoughts will be welcomed. Our profession has advanced significantly in the past few decades, as we now understand the need for and value of standardized processes in our examinations and interventions. As research evidence accumulates, we can now recommend appropriate measures and interventions, as well as processes for examining outcomes and providing follow-up. I can only conclude that as a profession, we have come of age. We have moved past the practices of incomplete examinations and arguments that we don't know which interventions are effective, because now we know what types of measures are needed to document the changes we are producing through our management, and researchers have documented the effectiveness of intervention procedures. But the process of developing clinical guidelines also leads directly to the need for additional research efforts, and the work of Kaplan, Cutler, and Fetters has also resulted in a series of research recommendations that will guide our investigative efforts in the future. Moreover, we understand that clinical practice guidelines are dynamic documents that will change over time. As colleagues begin to investigate areas where there are gaps in our knowledge, and as we begin to discover even more effective practices, clinical practice guidelines will evolve, and the care we provide to infants with congenital muscular torticollis will be even better than what we can offer today. Each of us needs to do our part to assure that infants entrusted to our care receive the finest physical therapy we can offer. Use this resource and help ensure that action recommendations become our standard practice.
Next, A section on pediatrics official document, Physical Therapy Management of Congenital Muscular Torticollis, an Evidence-Based Clinical Practice Guideline, by Sandra Kaplan of Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey, in Newark, New Jersey, Colleen Coulter, and Linda Fetters. Congenital muscular torticollis is an idiopathic postural deformity evident shortly after birth, typically characterized by lateral flexion of the head to one side and cervical rotation to the opposite side due to unilateral shortening of the sternocleidomastoid muscle. Congenital muscular torticollis may be accompanied by other neurologic or musculoskeletal conditions. Infants with congenital muscular torticollis are frequently referred to physical therapists to treat their asymmetries. This evidence-based clinical practice guideline provides guidance on which infants should be monitored, treated, and/or referred, and when and what PTs should treat. Based upon critical appraisal of literature and expert opinion, 16 action statements for screening, examination, intervention, and follow-up are linked with explicit levels of evidence. The clinical practice guideline addresses referral, screening, examination and evaluation, prognosis, first choice and supplemental interventions, consultation, discharge, follow-up, suggestions for implementation and compliance audits, flow sheets for referral paths and classification of congenital muscular torticollis severity, and research recommendations. Next, concurrent validity of the TIMP and the Bailey 3 scales at 6 weeks corrected age, by Suzanne Campbell of the University of Illinois at Chicago in Chicago, Illinois, Laura Zawaki, Kristen Rankin, Joseph Yoder, Nicole Shapiro, Zhou-Ying Li, and Rosemary White-Trott. The purpose of this study was to examine agreement between the test of infant motor performance, TIMP, and the Bailey 3. 145 infants born at 29 to 34 weeks gestation with socio-environmental risk factors were tested on the TIMP and Bailey 3 at 6 weeks corrected age. Scores were correlated to assess convergence-divergence of content. Decision analysis using a cutoff of the mean on the Bailey motor composite and half to one standard deviation from the mean on the TIMP assessed agreement on delay and non-delay. The TIMP-Bailey motor composite correlation was 0.55. The cognitive correlation was 0.31. And the language correlation was 0.28. 9% of infants scored less than minus one standard deviation on the TIMP, while no child scored less than minus one standard deviation on the Bailey motor scale. The sensitivity of this analysis was 31%. The authors conclude that convergent validity between the TIMP and the Bailey motor scale was demonstrated, but no infant showed delay on any Bailey scale. Therefore, the TIMP is preferred for early assessment of infants. Next, a special communication, Sedentary Behavior, Implications for Children with Cerebral Palsy, by Jennifer